Okay, so last left off Wednesday night, right? We were discussing the problem in Rashi, where it's unclear. Rashi says that Mion, right, this Kiddushin Derabanan for the girl who's lost her father, her brothers and mother can marry her off. By the way, I looked it up, and there are a lot of positions that she's able to do Mion until she becomes 12. So the whole time that she's, you know, until she turns 12, the Kiddushin were only Midrabanan. She is allowed to just stand up and say, I'm not interested in being married anymore. She can just, even though there was a full kiddushin, she got a ring, there was a ksuba, there was a chuppah, she can get up and say, I'm not interested, and that's it. There's no need for a get, no need for anything else. It's over. So the Mishnah had said that that process, refuses the husband she was married to, so that requires to be, that has to be done in front of a bezdin of three. Rashi said that this is called the Tikkun Derabanan Ke'in De'oraisa Tikkun, right? That this is based on, this Derabanan institution is based on some De'oraisa template. The problem was that Rashi didn't tell us what that De'oraisa template was. So the two options we had was he could be referring to Chalitza, which is what the Mishnah had linked Miyun to. The Mishnah had said, Hamiyunin ve'chalitza ve'shlosha. So then, in that case, Rashi's not telling us anything new, right? We already know from the Mishnah that Chalitza, which is Midoraisa, needs to have three judges. And then, you know, that's it, we can just go home. The other possibility, this is one that the Noda Yehuda is going to argue for, is that Rashi was actually referring to get, right? We have said that Mion really conceptually seems to have more in common with a get than with Chalitza, because you had a full marriage, and now you're ending the marriage, so it seems like Mion is like a get. And if that's the case, then we would have a new chiddush that whenever a get is written, it must be done in front of a bezdin of three. And what we were preparing to do was to see how the various achronim are going to present their arguments for either side, and then we're going to try to analyze the strengths and weaknesses of each argument that they bring. And by doing so, I think we'll gain some, like just like a drive-by blitz, some quick insights into how you know we think of Mion Chalitza and Git. So even though we're doing Sanhedrin this year, we can pick up some quick stuff from the Halachos of Eben HaEzer. All right, so I'm not going to even bother writing these down. But what we've got so far, we've got two arguments on the Chalitza side, and we've got one argument on the Git side, right? The main argument for the Gittin side, as we said, was just conceptually they seem to have more in common. And the arguments that we've got for the Chalitza side, number one, is that textually, right, as the Maharam Shif had said, Gittin mandakar shmeh. I don't see Gittin mentioned at all in this whole Mishnah. So for Rashi, who we know is normally very clear, to, you know, give an obscure reference to get to this huge halacha without actually, you know, any hint of it at all, just seems hard to buy from a textual perspective. And second of all, we saw that the truth is all these cases in the Mishnah seems to link the halachos that are conceptually connected to each other, right? We had gzeilos v'chavalos, we had nezek, chatzi nezek, all the various fines. We had ones mafata and motzi shema, right? The penalties to the man who's taking advantage of the woman. All those cases where the Mishnah had put things in a unit, right? This, and that have three. This, and that have three. This, and that have three. So the Mishnah had also said Mion and Chalitza. So it seems from the Mishnah you could argue that they do think there's some conceptual link between the two. However, we don't yet know what that is, and that's part of what we're going to try to figure out today. So let's first, I think it'll be more productive if we try to build up the Chalitza side, and then we will try to build up the get side. Again, right? The question of whether Mion is going to be more similar to Chalitza or whether Mion will be more similar to get. Okay, any questions before we start? Okay, amazing. So then I sent out the new and improved source sheet, which has more than just one source. So we already, you know, on Wednesday night, we very quickly saw the end of the Maharam Shif, but let's see it one more time. Okay, so claim number one that Maharam Shif is going to pose, this is on the last line, or technically the second last line of Maharam Shif I've got here, right after the brackets. Jennifer, you want to get it for us? Sarah Flomar?
The end of it.
Yeah, right after the brackets, Visagi, Vashini, then you have the closed brackets.
So it's so because Miyun is Danbe Amira, then it's more similar to Koza.
Right. So let's use our new marker for the Elisa side. And we'll use the red marker. Actually, the black marker for the kids. Okay, so argument number one that we got for Chalitza is what? What's the, how are Chalitza and Miyun really the same?
They're both done speech.
Both done, and not just through speech, we have to say they're done primarily through speech, right? Speech is the defining characteristic of Chalitza and of Miyun. Primarily. We poke any holes. Poke any holes in the comparison.
Well, Khalitza is not primarily done with speech.
That's going to be argument number one. Why not?
Because it's done with the whole shoe thing.
Right, what happened to the shoe thing? You have the ceremony, the shoe, the spitting. So, okay, great. So, argument number one will be Khalitza is not. Anything else?
I just thought though, like in the Torah itself, it says the person should say, "I did not," right?
The Maharam Shef is quoting the pasuk, right? That's a.
I'm saying like you don't necessarily see that in the Torah. Like a lot of times, like okay, we add words to like a ceremony. Like in the Torah itself, it says, or does it? I don't know.
This quote, "Lo chafasti lekachta," that is a quote from Deuteronomy. The brother says, "I do not want to marry her." So your counter argument is that even though we know Chalitza really has the boot and the spitting, so you're consistent, you very much want to build up the link between Miyun and Chalitza. That's been your position the whole time. So you're saying that no, really, even though it seems like Lisa's correct, and that the Chalitza really is an action driven, not speech driven, the fact that the Torah is telling me this verbal formulation, that indicates that actually the speech is particularly significant. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what you do. That's a counter argument. And that'll make the Maharam Shif very happy. Okay. Any other problems you see with his argument?
Well, the Yavam is the one saying what the Steelika.
Excellent.
And in the Mian it's mutual or at least like she it, talks about what she says.
Right. One is the man and one is the woman. Okay. Yeah.
But again, I think that makes it more parallel because it's not like a man-woman here as much as like the woman against her will had to be into this marriage, and same with the man against his will, he had to be connected to this. Not like.
So you could look at this from either perspective, right? You could say that both are cases where you've got a person who never wanted the marriage, or never wanted the relationship in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. The brother, he thought his brother was crazy for marrying his sister-in-law, and now all of a sudden, she's dumped on his doorstep, and he's supposed to marry her, and he's like, I don't want this. And this Kitano, she was, having like a nice time in fifth grade, and all of a sudden, she gets set up with this guy, and she's got no interest in him. So from that perspective, it seems similar, right? It's a way to get out of a marriage that you never really wanted. Okay, hey, look, we put that on there as a second one, right? Getting out of marriage number one. But on the other hand, who says maybe the fact is the man's side versus the woman's side, maybe that makes a fundamental difference, or maybe it doesn't. You could see the argument being made either way. Okay, so that's going to be argument number one. That's the Maharam Shef. Now let's go on to the Rashash. Yes, by the way, the Rashash, interesting story how he got published. He's found in the back of every Gemara since the Rashash was written, he was published. He was a very wealthy man. I don't know exactly how he made his money, but it's business of some sort. And he's also a serious Talmud Chacham. So he wrote this Peirush to the Gemara, and he wanted to get it published. So he told the publishers, I will give you the money, print Gemaras with my Peirush in the back of it. So that's how it broke in, but it was so successful that it's been kept in. It's been kept in ever since. Because people said, yeah, actually, you know, it was money well spent. So let's see what he's got here. It's a short piece. Tal, you want to take it?
Sure.
You can say no, by the way, if you want.
My pleasure.
Do some Mia.
Communion. Dechol tikkun rabbanan ke'en deraita tikkun. And then lots of Roshi Tevot. Are we going through those?
No, we don't have to. It's a no to be Yehuda.
Oh, no to be Yehuda be... Mishnah?
Yeah. Mahadura Tinyana. I don't know, it's because I looked it up. So it's, yeah, it's Mahadura Tinyana. It's his second batch of Chuvos in Chalak, Eben HaEzer, Simin, Kuf Yadalit. Yeah, so this also I would not know if I hadn't seen it. This is the Tosfos of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger has notes on the Mishnayos, and he has a little note on the Mishnah where he says that the Nodi Yehuda is right.
Okay. Havinu Dirat Selamar Ke'im Get Shel Torah. B'kahu B'zeh Deheichan Matzinu B'get She'yehe Tzarech Gimel.
So what's his first objection here?
So he says it's like get.
Right, that's what the Noah Yehuda and the Enrique Vager says. Right. He says, okay, B'zeh, they made a mistake about this.
That get needs three things.
So, yeah, three, meaning three judges.
Oh, three judges. Oh, right. Three judges. B'liyaf shalomar de kavanato al chalitza shehi ke'en mi'un shehayava mima'en le'yavama k'dichtiv ma'an yavimi v'gomer. So Jennifer's point that there's like a similar concept where he refuses to marry her in chalitza.
Exactly. So now we can build up that point with one little nugget, which is, right, again, this is a biblical quote, that in the parsha of Yibam and Chalitza, the Torah says that the woman comes to the Beis Din, and she says, May Ein Yivmi, right? My brother-in-law refuses to do Yibam. So not only do we have the refusal, so... language, but again, what's the potential response we could see to his argument here? That, well, both are cases of miun, right? Ma'in yiv mi versus the woman saying, right, I'm mima enes against this husband.
No, but there's no textual link.
Interesting. That's actually a good point, right? Which is, you know, the more we talk about, well, they're both refusals, is it so, you know, get is a refusal too. You may not call it a miyun, so you may not be, you know, depending on how impressed you are by the fact that the Torah uses the word ma'in for chalitza, maybe you won't think that it's such a big deal, right? A get is also a kind of a refusal. So that's objection number one. Then objection number two is, again, we'll say the same man versus woman argument, right? That is the miun being done by the man, or is the miun being done by the woman? So this actually gets drawn out even better if we look at the next source, which is the Chassam Sofer, right? Chassam Sofer is the major posek from the generation after the Nodi Yehuda in Central Europe. So all the time you've got, especially the Nodi Yehuda takes up one radical position, you'll have the Chassam Sofer in the next generation invariably, sometimes like, you know, boosting it, but often kind of trying to pull back, right? Where the last generation they were going all the way in this direction, he's trying to get us back towards the mainstream. So sure enough, here he actually has two chuvos where he objects to the Nodi Yehuda. He thinks that it's crazy. And I just cut out one small selection where we get like one court argument that he makes. So I guess it's my turn. Chasam Sofer says, Ach Pasha Kavanas Rashi Kai Achalitza, right? It is obvious that Rashi's intention is to talk about chalitza, right? Not talk about get. Shanishnis ima, right? It is said with it in the Mishnah, so we've got the textual connection. Ubei biksahu. This is a quote from like a Gemara in Bava Metzia. They're of the same category. Right? So in other words, they're textually linked, and he argues that they're conceptually linked. They're from the same group. How so? The inyan dematzinu batora. Kishahaisha tovas liftor mi baal, that when the woman wants to become exempted, right, get away from the new husband, the brother-in-law, dehainu shetovas lachlots, namely she wants to do chalitza, sricha shetaval the bezdin, right, she must go to the bezdin, dafka, but also yevimto hashara al zakenim, right? This is a reference to Rus's right with Ploni Almoni, where they go to the gate where the zakenim were. Alkein tikni rabbanan b'miyan, right? So and then based on that, the rabbanan established miyan. Shagam sham ha'isha ba'asa liftor mibala, right? If the minor woman wants to get away from her husband. Sricha shetaval lebezdin, right? She too must go to the court to ki'inda reisa tikun. Just like the woman who wants to get out of her yibum has to go to the court to do a chalitza, so too the woman who wants to get out of her childhood marriage has to go to the court to do a miyum. Aval haget, what's going on in a get? Shehabal poterishto, there it's the man who has to give the get to the woman, right? It's against her will even. Although we don't allow that to happen, lamaisa, lo matzinu shehezkika Torah bezin. We never find any reference in the Torah that a get needs to be done in front of a court. So Chasam Sofer is going to give argument number three, and now we'll see how things kind of get fun. Three is woman wants. Opposed to get where man wants.
So since when is chalitza the woman wants it? Like,
yeah.
So the funny thing is that the truth is, even though the Rashash, right, and the Chasam Sofer are on the same team, they're actually making arguments that would nullify what the other person says.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Rashash is highlighting where the Torah quotes me'ein yivmi, right? That my brother-in-law is refusing to marry me, and oh, that's the link, right? The brother-in-law is refusing to marry versus mi'an, right? Where the woman's referring, is refusing to marry, and since we see that both cases are refusals, even though they're done by different genders, the Rashash wanted to compare them. The Chasam Sofer gets up and he says, well, I really think that what's going on is the woman wants out. Again,
the whole parsha of Yibum in the Torah seems very much like the man wants out.
Right, elaborate.
Like, just look at, like, yeah, I don't, like, I'm looking at the Sukkim right now.
Yeah, okay, let's go open.
Quotes that Yish Lakachat Yibimto. But I'll tell, like, and she says to him, like, this is what should be done to a person who doesn't want to, like, it seems
he's
like.
He's the one who doesn't want it.
Yeah,
he's one who doesn't want it.
I don't see anything about her not wanting it.
The ritual is a humiliating ritual, right? I mean, we take off his shoe, we spit on him. You know, the comparison to Yehuda's sons, Er and Onan, right, who didn't want to, or not the firstborn, but Onan, right, the second son, who didn't want to have a kid with Tamar, right, he didn't want to keep up his brother's bloodline, and he's killed, right, and he's severely criticized for that. So happens to be that Chasam Sofer's claim seems to not fit into the Pesukim at all.
Yeah.
So okay, so objection number one to him is going to be
like I agree with like his argument. Like I just think he
that's
exaggerated
true.
A little bit. Or, like, yeah.
Why is that okay. And then argument number two is going to be right. Whichever one of these two you take, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? If you like the Rashash, then Chasam Sofer is going to be a kasha. If you like Chasam Sofer, the Rashash is going to be a kasha. So it's a great example of how, you know, people are trying to say this, are trying to make this, claim the same side, and yet they end up making contradictory arguments. Okay. But now you have black on white, right? This is a chiddush of the Chasam Sofer. I never would have thought so. That, you know, we always thought of chalitza as being done, you know, it's hurting the woman, it's against her will. Look, theoretically, a Chasam Sofer could be correct, right? Let's say the woman doesn't, you know, she didn't sign up to marry the brother-in-law. So, you know, is she going to be forced into this? So the truth is that the institution of chalitza, even though in the Torah it's depicted as, you know, the brother-in-law is doing not right, and it's a failure on his behalf, truth is it's also a potential defense mechanism for the woman. Right, where... Yeah, can she refuse chalitza, or can she refuse...
Can she refuse to marry him?
If
he wants to marry her, and she doesn't.
She can refuse to marry... Look, it has to be... She can. Now, where it gets complicated is that Yibam, right, Kiddushin, there are three ways that Kiddushin can be done, right? Either through giving money, giving a document, or through having relations. Yibam is only done through having relations. That's the only way to do it. The halacha is that, I believe, I'm almost positive, that if the brother-in-law rapes the sister-in-law, then it would be an effective Yibam. So technically he could do it against her will. If we're operating within the court system, right, I mean, you know, this goes all the way back to the Gemara, if she says, I'm not interested, then the Gemara says that we do force him to do chalitza. And in fact, where this gets interesting is, right, we know that since Rabbeinu Gershom, at least in Ashkenazi circles, we've had the practice of never doing Yibam, right? The chalitza always comes first. Although the truth is, you have all these kind of crazy cases in the Rishonim where they try to figure out why, you know, maybe in this case Yibam should happen. But the, like 99% of the time, chalitza comes first. And there's actually a machlokas in the Gemara whether we prefer Yibam to chalitza, which is kind of shocking, right? If you just go by the textual evidence in the pasuk, it seems obvious that Yibam should precede chalitza. So how could there possibly be a position in the Gemara that chalitza is a better option than Yibam? So one easy argument to be aware of is that, you know, it's an assumption to be making that the woman actually is interested in her brother-in-law, right? And that we may prefer chalitza because we don't want to be pressured, you know, it's bad enough that she's a widow, we don't want to be pressuring her into a marriage that she doesn't want on top of that.
From the Chasam Sofer, it doesn't seem like it's that she wants it. Maybe I read it correctly, but it's not that she wants chalitza, but it could just be that, let's say the man wants to do chalitza, she's the one who has to go take the, she's the one who has to go to the court. Like, it doesn't, where did it say?
Valka.
Okay, you could say that. In other words, what your explain? I think I know what you're saying, but explain a little bit.
Does that mean when she wants to leave Torah Me'abah?
Yes.
Oh, fine. Never mind.
But what you're saying, I mean, this gets a little far afield, but technically you could say that if the husband says, you know, look, I'm very happy, the brother-in-law says, I'm very happy where I am. Like, you know, I'm living my life. I don't want to do Yibam. I don't want to do a chalitza. Like, I'm good.
Really,
I'm good where I am. It doesn't affect him at all. He lives his normal life. The woman's the one in trouble, right? Because the woman can't get remarried until she either gets a Yibam or she gets a chalitza. There were all these cases, for example, after the expulsion from Spain. So you've got a family that gets broken up. One brother, you know, converts to Christianity and stays in Spain. One couple, you know, leaves Spain, and then the husband dies. So you've got this woman, let's say, like in Turkey, with her Christian brother-in-law in Spain. So she can't go back because she's Jewish and Jews aren't allowed there. So what does she do? Is she stuck? Can we figure out some way to say that, well, since the brother is a Christian, maybe he doesn't count for Yibum and Chalitza? So yeah, 100%, you've got the risk of Aguna. And maybe what the Chasam Sofer could be saying is that, you know, Isha Tovas Liftor, it doesn't mean that she wants Chalitza per se, it's just that she wants to be free. And if the husband doesn't want Yibum, then she's going to want a chalitza. The problem is that the Chasam Sofer is arguing for a real fundamental conceptual link between chalitza as being the woman wanting out and miyun being the woman wanting out. So it seems like he's saying more than just, well, the woman doesn't want to be an aguna and he doesn't want to do yibum, so she wants a chalitza. It really seems to be like he's portraying chalitza as being driven by the woman to get out from the man. Which is possible, but A, it's a chiddush, and B, it goes against the argument of the Rosh Hashanah. But we should realize that there is that perspective of chalitza, which we wouldn't have thought, you know, especially just from reading the Pesukim and Kiseta. Okay, so now we've got three arguments on the record so far. We'll get two more, and then we can make Talia happy and go to the other side and argue for the get connection. Okay, so the last source I have, did I send you the Gilyonei Hashas, or is it on here?
It's not on here.
This is... Sorry, actually, you know what? It's not, I didn't send you the Gilyonei Hashas, but if you can get open the Margolios Hayam that I emailed out, so we could just look at the outside, what he says.
I realize that a woman could become an aguna through, like, yibum complications also.
Right. It's not as severe, for example, like, if she would just blow off the whole thing. Because she's not an HSH, so she wouldn't be convicted of adultery. So if she blew it off and married someone, it wouldn't be as severe a violation. But, like, halakhically, she's an aguna. She would be stuck. Yeah. That was like the if you read the tshuva like the Beis Yosef and that whole generation in the 1500s from Gedrus Svarad, like those first two generations, it's coming up all the time.
Did anyone like come up with some sort of solution?
So the question is, it's actually really interesting. This goes back to the Gaonim, because the Torah says, right, that it's the brother, the obligation of the brother is to do Yibum or Chalitza. So the argument that you can make is that even though we know that somebody who converts to Christianity or Islam, right, a man in Judaism is still considered Jewish, right? You can't lose your Kedushas Yisrael by converting. Can you lose your status as a brother? So for example, the Ramban thinks that even the Torah says you can't take interest from your brother. So the Ramban argues that if people converts Christianity, that you're allowed to take interest. So you have positions going back to the Gaonim arguing for that the same should apply to Yibum and Chalitza. And then the question is, well, maybe if when the couple got married, he was a Christian, so that's one thing. But if when the couple were married, he was a stark Jew, and that brother-in-law relationship had already been established, then it's kind of another step to say that he's out. The majority position consistently seem to be that we do think that there's a relationship and that you wouldn't need Yibum and Chalitza until about the 1550s, where I forget which one of the postings it was, but in Salonika is in Greece. Until World War II, Salonika was a majority Jewish city. The port was closed on Shabbos. So they decided that they were going to paskin that you know Mumar is out, Meshum, you know, you need brotherhood to have Yibum and at least for during that time that became the predominant position. I don't know if that held up subsequently, like as the pressure reduced, if Psak shifted back towards what had been the more mainstream position. but definitely for a time, the 1500s, the mainstream, the deep South became to allow her to get remarried. But like, if you open up the tour in Beis Yosef, it's a huge machlokas there. Yeah. So, okay, so let's go on to the Gulyone Ganesh Shas. Yeah, it's a fascinating case of history of halakha in action. Okay, that's the wrong document. No, I can't find it, so if when you have this open, you want to just read the... It's like three lines, if you see where he has the Gulyone Hashas. It's like toward halfway through, I think. The
on which one?
On the Yudchat. Yeah. Dalad was on the first Rashi and the parent. He quotes a bunch. He quotes most of the people we've seen. And then he has Gulyone Hashas.
Oh, yeah, I found it. Gulyone Hashas, it's over here. 9 lines from Zara. It's in the middle of the sentence. Do you see that?
Yosef Engel.
Yeah. Oh, Engel. The news about Chalitza below the guest. So the Chalitza Hayavah Osa Ma'asad the Abam Shacholatza Na'alu V'chach Niyun Hide Abza Hide Abza Shama Lo Bein Abba.
Okay. So let's get that. What's the first argument?
That means like Khalifa, not like guest.
Uh-huh.
With Khalifa, the Yavama is the one who does a maaseh. She's the one who's active in this case. And also Miyun, she's the one who's active.
As opposed to
the man.
Right. Okay, so let's get on.
Woman.
As active participant. So it's the get when the woman is the passive participant. So that argues for a conceptual link between Miyun and Chalitza. Okay.
So to the get, Habal, who's Abad Mazda, it's not like that because in get, the Baal is the one who's the active party, and in Miyun, she is.
Okay, so elaborating on this point, great.
So Ozo, Miyun, who is La Kor Zika Ishut Kusha, Kaka Chalitza Baal Hakia Zika, the Ains of Ishut Lagamre.
Right, so this is, we saved the best argument for last, although Ari was going to get it to be the first one last time, which is what, right? Here's, I think, the real core. The best of the conceptual arguments that's going to be made.
Right, that both Miyun and Chalitza are coming to break off these quasi marriages. They're not full on issues. So.
Exactly.
5, right, quality of marriage. The language, right, quasi. Zika is like what that describes the relationship between.
Exactly. Zika is the word that the Gemara uses, and the Mishnah uses, really, to describe the pre-Yibum relationship between the wife slash wives of the deceased and the brother slash brothers of the deceased. Okay, right, so a get is coming to undo a full-blown marriage, right? It was Kiddushin, Midoraisa, and everything. Miyun and Chalitza is only a weak Ishus. So this is the best argument. The question is going to be, right, if this is the best argument, then it's going to be the one that we're under the most pressure to reject. And not only that, but since it's the best argument, figuring out a way to reject it would be like our most fruitful conceptual move, right? If you've advanced your strongest conceptual argument to link Chalitza and Miyun, then if you can undo it, that's going to be a strong conceptual move in the other direction. So we would be thrilled if we could figure out a way to combat the Gulyone Hashas's logic. Any responses to him right now before we see the son of the Noda Yehuda, who is not going to take it straight on?
Well, I think the argument that the woman cannot act the true active party in Kalitza still holds against the first argument of the doing that. But really the man's active party in Kalitza.
Yeah, so you know what? Let's take a step back. How would you object to that one, right? Factually, there's no question it's correct. The woman is doing the chalitza, the woman is doing the mian, and the man is doing the get. I don't think any, you know, from a, like if you're a play-by-play announcer, you're not going to contest any of those, right? The dry facts are indeed the case. So how would you neutralize that claim? Both claims seem pretty strong. I think the Gedolei HaShas makes the best arguments of the Achronim that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All that does is impress for us how solid an argument that it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give it a little star. So let's see the counter responses from the son of the Nodi Yehuda, who may be biased, but he tries to defend his dad's
mm-hmm.
position. And then we'll see if that will help us come up with the response. Right? The son of the Nodi Yehuda is living before the Goyoni Hashas. Goyoni Hashas is at the end of the 19th century, and the son of the Nodi Yehuda is at the beginning of the 19th century. So, you know, he didn't have Gilyoni HaShas in front of him. So we're not going to see a direct engagement with those two arguments at the bottom. But we'll see if we can, you know, tease out something from what he said. Okay, so if you can get open the scan I had sent out from the notes in the back of the Nodi Yehuda, where they give you an extensive quote of his son's tshuva. Mm-hmm. Okay, we really only need to see one paragraph. How many of you guys all have it?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So if you skip to the second column on the first page, the paragraph of Uvyoser Anitama. So this should have everything that we want. Are you want to start it?
Yeah. Uvyoser Anitama al Rav Aram Shif al Lama Tzarich Lahamsi Adimayon Miyun Lechalitza. So he wants to take on this argument that they both have the aspect of Amira, Chalitza and Mia.
Which argument number one we got on there, right?
The Asht Mitate, the Dibre Tosfos, Masechta Yevamah.
Right, so he left out the Tosfos.
Okay. Afilu Mian Nami. Okay. Shekatu de Chalitza Mian. Dimayen lahadidi shebishnehem yotzot ayodei maase shalahem. Dehainu shechlitza hi b'maase ha'isha shi chaletza lo haminal. So that really that they're similar in the fact that in terms of action, I guess. That in chalitza she's the one that removes the shoe. V'amiyun hu gamkin ayodei his pa'alut ha'isha shal merit. There it is, I guess, more verbal, but he's saying that the real comparison
mm-hmm.
is that one is, yeah.
In other words, he's saying, look, you know, Maram Shif, before, you know, even if you're going to make the argument for your side on the left, and you were going to say that Mion is like Chalitza, personally, I'm going to disagree, but you know, at least if you're going to argue
right.
your side, get your argument right. And don't go making up argument number one, right? I don't care about them being done through speech. In fact, as we said, it may not even be true that it's currently done through speech. If you wanted to argue your side, then you should not have forgotten, right? Everybody knows the Tosfos and Yevamos Kufal from the base, right? Nobody doesn't know that Tosfos. And there, they said black on white that what was the link between Chalitza and Mion? Link between them was that it's done by the woman, right? So he should have argued for argument number four, or even number four, we have it as Goyon Hashas, but it was said, you know, 700-800 years earlier by Tosfos right on the page. So, you know, don't go making up bad arguments for your position. At least quote the good arguments that are in the Rishonim. That's his first move, right? Before he even takes on his claim, he's gonna, you know, undermine him from this position, right? It's an interesting way to argue. Okay. Now he's got to move on and say, you know, okay, so, you know, even though he made the Maram Shif look bad, but he also made his life harder because, you know, all he's really, it's like he's driving and he's stuck in the snow, right? And he hit the accelerator pedal, but it only got worse because now, you know, so, okay, so at the price of making the Maram Shif look bad, he's advanced a second strong argument against him, and it's got the authority of Tosfos. So far, even though like it looks flashy, he hasn't really helped his cause.
So he's saying it's only limited to that one aspect that Tosfos brought up.
Exactly. In other words, even though, yeah, I just gave you number four and I stuck Tosfos on it, truth is that in the world of the sons of Nodi Yehuda, right, this wall is going to disappear and this is going to disappear and we're just going to be left with this against everything he's going to use to try to fill up this side of the board somehow. So that's how he's going to try to respond. Right. Yeah, so now he says there are all these different ways, right? Hademion mian legetu beharbeidvarin. There are many different ways.
That you can fill up that side of the board.
Yeah, exactly. That get is going to be compared to chalitza. Okay, so and he even gives us numbers, right? Aleph, bet, gimel, dalet, and he. So he's even making it convenient for us to see his arguments.
Should I say?
Sure.
Aleph beget he yotzat mirshubala, abimian yotzat mirshubala. So I guess that's in both cases you're leaving the Baal.
Yeah, exactly. Leaving husband. As opposed to what's going on with Halita.
I mean, I feel like it could
she
be.
She was never in his reshut.
Exactly. Okay. That's
argument
number one.
Argument
number two.
Okay. Ketu achar kedushin mechupa, begam mien hu achar kedushin mechupa. Ubishneihem hayakinyan ha'ishut miyad ha'ba'al. So the ba'al did a kinyan ishut. Masha enkein chalita shadayin lo haita b'rishut ha'yavam. Lo haya adayin kinyan ishut b'neihem. Rake de zika shehi zikuka lo ayadeh mitad achid. Lo nasa kinyan miyad ha'yavam. So it's like, sounds like he's buttressing the first argument a little bit. Or maybe it's different.
It's related, but there's more here, right? Because he's saying who started the marriage in both cases?
The man.
The man.
His Kenyan issue.
Yeah. Man started the relationship. Now, what's interesting here is that you can really contrast argument number four, right, the Tosfos argument, with argument number two. On the one hand, right, chalitza and get,
right,
the woman is ending it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, get and mion, the man had started it. So which side are you going to argue is more definitional to what these concepts are all about? That's true. I would have thought the end. Why would you have thought the end?
Because it's an end process. About.
Exactly. Whereas the actual action we're talking about is the action of Chalitza or Mia, right? So why should how the marriage got started in the first place, you know, 10 years ago, have to do with what we're talking about now? But the answer is going to be, ironically, because you were so impressed with quasi-Isha, right? You were so impressed with the idea that really we're focusing on is not the action to undo the marriage per se, What we really want to care about is examining the nature of the marriage that's being undone, right? That was argument number five. So if you're going to be impressed by argument number five, then you really have to take this argument seriously as well, right? Because both of those are focusing on the nature of the relationship that's being undone, as opposed to focusing on the means of undoing that relationship. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So now we've got two arguments. Let's get to number three.
Get ita baal korcha shabal begar shet ishto baal korcha begamian ita baal korcho shehim emaranet bo baal korcho shabal masha inkein kalita. Lita baal korcha ad sheshneihem merutim lechalita. So in the cases of get and mian, only one party needs to kind of want to do it, as opposed to chalita, you need both parties.
Can be done. Again, will. Talked about the fact that, you know, chalitza, you run an aguna risk in chalitza, right? This was Lisa's way of trying to moderate the chasam sofer, that saying that, well, maybe all he's saying is that the the woman wants to be free. If that means, you know, the husband's the brother-in-law is very happy to sit there and do nothing. If he's doing nothing, then the woman's going to want chalitza because at least she should get out of it. So the Now the son of the Yehuda is using that exact argument on his side, right? And he's saying that and again, the question, like, you know, it's one thing to just point out similarities and differences. What then actually matters is you have to say that these similarities and differences are invested with conceptual significance, right? So the fact that get and mion can be done against the will of one of the parties tells you something significant about how they actually work, as opposed to chalitza, which has to be done consensually with the agreement of both.
What does that mean, it has to be done with both?
If the man wants to stay at home and never do a chalitza, he's within his rights. And if the woman wants to stay home and never get chalitza, she's within her rights.
And the Zika just
sits
there?
The Zika will sit there forever. Okay. Exactly.
There's a similar concept where if she doesn't want to marry him, but he does, and he's sort of stuck, or can he just, like, is he also bound to her that way when it comes to Yivam? Until they resolve it one way or the other?
Yes, but the question is, Lamai Nafkamina, right? Okay, so he's bound to her, but what difference
like
will that actually make in his life?
Like, he could get married to someone else.
Why not?
He could have multiple wives.
So there could be implications.
Does he have responsibility for him?
Well, one responsibility will be, it's financially detrimental to his case, because, right, since the deceased brother had no children, that's why I have Yib in the first place, so the brothers inherit the estate. But as long as she's on the books as his widow, she lives off the estate.
Right.
So, you know, there will be that significant counter pressure on him to let her go one way or the other, because as long as he's around, right, she doesn't just collect her ksuba money, she also can, you know, live off the estate as long as she wants. So you've got the financial pressure on him to do something. But theoretically, you know, he'd be within his rights to not. Okay, excellent. So let's go on to argument number four. And then we'll take stock of all of them. Dalet.
Get in tariq li yot nocha chabal abad isha daha ita b'shlifa. So in the case of get, you can use a shaliach. Begam mian in sarich liyot nochach habal, nahabimaeh ab shalom b'tnei habal. So I guess so too there, it doesn't have to be in front of him where she refuses. Hashem kein chalitza delita b'shlifot b'ayavam b'ayavama b'ayim
b'beisim. So here is an interesting one. I would not have thought of this one. Required physical presence. Right, if you want to give a get and your wife is out of town, so or you're out of town, so how can you give a get without ever confronting your wife directly? Appoint a shliach. Okay. Let's keep that in mind. And now, what's argument number? And again, right? So who says that this? Oh, okay, so maybe, you know, okay, who cares? Very nice, right? Is it really so significant that you need the fact that the chalitza needs physical presence and the other two don't? Does that tell you something really, really fundamentally different about them, or is it just, look, you know, how could you do a chalitza without them both being there?
Because there's like a whole ritual.
Yeah, she's not taking off his shoe if he's not there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even though you could argue, okay, well, why can't you have a shliach? But the same argument could be, right, why can't you appoint a shliach to put on tefillin for you, right? Reason you can't appoint a shliach to put on tefillin for you, or any mitzvah. Exactly, we say mitzvah begufa, right? Any mitzvah that has to be done with your body, you cannot appoint a shliach for, because, you know, it's one thing if someone wants to, you know, a couple wants to have kiddushin. So, you know, all we care about is the giving of money. There's no reason why, you know, man has to give the money with his hands to the woman. We care about that the transaction happens, right? It doesn't matter if the man gives the money to the woman, or the man gives the money to the woman's banker, or the man's banker gives the money to the woman's banker. Either way,
the
chalitza is something that's done on the body, right?
In what sense? The shoe is...
The spitting? Right, spitting on the spitting on some, you know, poor guy who got off the street is not the same as spitting on the brother-in-law who's neglecting to take care of his dead brother's widow, right? They can't compare. So maybe that's the only reason why chalitza needs physical presence, and it's not invested with any significance, right? Even if you agree to the facts. So you're going to need to make two claims to get any of these to work, right? One, you're going to have to point a similarity. And two, you're going to have to argue that similarity matters. Okay. Finally, let's get number five on here.
Get in your oser ota la ba'ala v'kot much lo nisei ba'acher in a meseret ba'ala Yisrael ayde gerushin v'yako hu v'achzira. So, right, once you have a divorce, theoretically, if she doesn't get married to somebody else in the interim, she can get back together with him. So, same with Mian. But Halita, once you do that, you drop the ball and there's no.
Right. Can you go home? Couple gets divorced, and then, you know, 20 minutes later they decide that was a bad idea, they can get remarried. If the woman does miyun, and then she decides, actually, you know, I was only 10 years old, I didn't realize what a good guy he is, I really should go back to him, so she can do that too. As opposed to chalitza, right, once you've got chalitza, there's no going back, they can no longer get married. Okay, so... in the world of the son of the Noda Yehuda, right, it's become one versus, you know, one argument versus five arguments, because he likes more. So let's just clarify what we've got to do with our last 15 minutes, and we'll see how much we have. So we still need to take on the argument, quasi-Ishus argument, right? How are we going to reject that? And we need to figure out how we're going to reject all five of these. So let's try to reject all five of these. And then we'll see what we would say about quasi. Okay, so get versus get and Mion, she's leaving her husband, right? They were married, their husband, as opposed to Halitza, she's only leaving her brother. How are we going to get out of that?
But he is supposed to be her husband. He's not just. But with Khalifa, he's not just her brother-in-law anymore. He's supposed to be her husband. And
okay, you could say that. Or you could try to talk up the relationship. Maybe we shouldn't be dismissing the relationship between the sister-in-law and the brother-in-law so much. Although, you're going to be hard-pressed to say that, because at the end of the day, they aren't really married. But you could, let's put it this way, the Sephardim...
They're not really married in me either.
Exactly. Okay. So let me try to boost up Lee's argument, and then I'll get to yours. The Sfarno actually says, right, it's kind of funny that after Yibam happens, you've got this full-blown marriage, right? The sister-in-law, brother-in-law are fully married. Trivia question, right? The only case in the Torah where you have a full marriage with no kiddushin is in the case of Yibam. So the Sfarno argues that actually there was a kiddushin in this case as well, namely the kiddushin of the dead older brother. Right, that all that the brother-in-law is doing is he's stepping into his dead brother's shoes, and that kiddushin from dead brother, he's just stepping in, right, and it's like a swap. Yeah. He's just taking his brother's place in the old marriage. So maybe you could argue that even though they're brothers, you know, they're just brother-in-law and sister-in-law, there actually is some sort of husband and wife relationship here. It would be a cool argument. It's hard to say, right? I mean, it's a great Sfarno, but it's a minority position. But we should have it up. Okay. All right. You were going to argue. The what?
Yeah, that you could shoot down the Mian idea. Like,
you could kill argument number one by talking about argument number five.
It's not, yeah.
Right? She's leaving her husband, but it's only a quasi-husband, right? Here, in Get, she's leaving a full-blown husband. And in Mian, she's leaving a quasi-husband. So if I think that if I think of the Mian as only a quasi isha, it's not a real marriage, then argument number one is gonna start to fall away. Okay. Argument number two. Man started the relationship. Well, we should really, it's more than that, right? There's a kiddushin, there's a chuppah, there's a kinyan isha, right? The man did all these things.
As opposed to Chalitza, where he's.
Opposed to Chalitza, where.
Well, if you hold out this far now, then maybe he is.
That's going to be topic number one. Yeah. Exactly. Right? So, very good. Right? And we have a consistent way to debate him on both points, if I really have that Kiddushin factor. And the truth is, right, you guys had said earlier that really number one and number two seem connected. And the rejection kind of can be connected, which is, yeah, the man started the relationship, but. To say that the man did what he has in there of kiddushin and chuppah and kinyan and isha, okay, but you know it's like a knockoff. He did a knockoff kiddushin, chuppah, and kinyan and isha, right? And even though the man's the active party, what he's doing is not really so similar. That's one way to reject it. Or as we said, also very nice. The man started it, but we're talking about the ending, right? We're not interested in who started, who finished. So we're talking about who's starting. We really are interested in who's finishing. Because after all, we're talking about the actions of undoing marriages. So chalitza is being done by the woman, and mian is being done by the woman. So, right, don't talk to me about what happened 10 years earlier. Okay. Argument number three. Can be done against the will of any one party, right? Get can be done against the will of the woman. Chalitza can be done against, Mian can be done against the will of the man, and Chalitza both have to say okay. So why should that be an invalid argument? Both are being done against the will.
Well, get is against the woman's will, and me is against the man's will.
Correct. Exactly. Right. Very nice being done against the will, but I could really say, let's put it this way, you know, rather than set it up as you know, get is against the will, and mian is against the will, and chalitza is both, I could really have one polar extreme. I could say, get is against the will of the woman, chalitza is both, and mian is against the will of the man. So if I thought of it that way, if I focus on the gender difference, I could put them on opposite poles, right? Far from having them together, they're really, you know, extreme opposite. So that's, again, going to depend, you know, each side has to deal with this question, right? Of to what extent do the gender roles in their respective cases matter for your comparing or contrasting, right? Just like we said, you know, this side, right? Man versus woman doesn't matter. So to here, right? Man. Okay, number four, no required physical presence. So I think here there are two responses to you, right? We said that
binder get, you need get can be done with the shliach. You don't need to be there yourself. Milan, the woman, just goes to the court. Whereas chalitza, both need it. Okay. One has a response to me said was, well, that's true, but it doesn't matter, right? Because chalitza doesn't mean physical presence. Because that's the nature of the beast, right? You need, the Torah tells you chalitza needs an action, and the action needs to have those people. So what are you going to do? That's just what it is. That's like, that's one way of responding. I think there's another way to respond, which is, the son of the youth is making a bit of an assumption. Right? Let's draw it out. He says, for Mian, you don't need anything at all, right? The girl just goes to the court, and she says, I mentioned husband, and that's it, right? The husband of the court said he's no longer married. In chalitza, you got polar opposite. Both need to be aware, both need to be there. What do you actually need in the case of God? He said, the son of the youth just said what you need. And we mentioned it. Right, if a man wants to divorce a woman and they're not around, so how does he do it? He can't just go to the court. Right, he needs to appoint a shliach. And the shliach will do the get for him. So what? So here's the question, right? The son of the Yehuda is assuming that I look at the shliach as some total other person, right? That's not me. But what? Shliach shalom kamos, the Gemara says, right? So Rosh Hashanah would always say, whenever you see two things being compared, right? In Hebrew, we call it the kapha demayon, right? Two things are like each other. So then you always want to ask, okay, well, are they really like each other, or are they only kind of like each other? That's the simplified way to put it, right? So when the Gemara tells you that shlucho shaladim kamoso, a person's shliach is like him or herself in the case of a get, does that only mean, meaning he has the right to perform the gerushin? Or does that mean that I really look at them as one and the same person, right? When my shliach does something, it's as if it's me, right? He becomes an extension of me. Right? How can the woman accept kiddushin through someone else? She's the one getting married, right? If she's the one getting married, how is someone else getting the ring put on her finger? Right? That doesn't make any sense. How's that possible? So, you know, okay, maybe she has this legal status, and she has a right to act on your behalf, etc., etc., etc. We also could say, very simply, that since the woman appointed her as her shliach to get the ring, so when the woman is put on the ring of the shliach, it's as if the ring was being put on the ring of the woman herself. If that's the case, then the son of the Noah of the Yehuda says, well, in Mion, you don't need physical presence at all. And in Get, you don't need physical presence at all. You need shlichus. You can say the exact opposite, right? In Chalitza, we need physical presence. And in Get, you know, I need to have a shliach who it's as if it's the person, you know, the man and the woman, him and herself, as opposed to Mion, where I don't need any, you know, vestige of the man. Man's out in Timbuktu, the woman goes to court, she does the marriage with no representation whatsoever. So if you think of shlichus, right, this is, like, it's a great way of one, two arguing positions could be resting on an assumption that's out of left field. Right? We didn't talk about shlichus until just now. But all of a sudden here we've got this, you know, maybe it's this key machlokas. If I really think of the shliach as being like the woman herself, then the son of the Jewish argument will totally fall away. Finally, argument number five, can they go back? So this one really isn't fair, because after chalitza, why can't the woman go back to the brother-in-law?
Does that have to do with Arayah?
Yeah, namely what?
That you can't just marry. I don't know if that's true. That you can't marry a second brother after he. Like, you can't marry your ex-husband. Like, whatever. You can't marry a brother after you've married.
She can't marry her brother-in-law, right?
Yeah.
You can't marry your brother-in-law in halakha, right?
Oh, even though after
you cannot marry that. You cannot marry your brother-in-law. If you're, you know, if you ever marry one brother, the other brothers are out.
So
that has nothing. Okay, so technically it's true, right? Again, the two questions you want to ask. One, is the comparison true? And two, does the comparison matter?
So we'll say, yeah, you're right, right? Okay, so after Chalitza, they cannot go back. And after Get and after Mion, they can. But that doesn't tell you anything about how Get or Mion or Chalitza work. That just tells you the facts of life, which is these people are in-laws to each other, and now they can't marry. That doesn't tell you anything about how Chalitza works, how Mion works, or how Get works. That's how you would take on the last argument of the son of Yehuda. Finally, so let's go back to the point of the quasi-Jesus, right? This seems like it's the strongest point of the Goyon and Hashas. And we're going to argue that Chalitza and Mion are undoing a weak Ishas, as opposed to Get, which is undoing a strong Ishas. So actually, for here, let's go back to the original Rashi, right? The Rashi that we were arguing on the first place had said, Kol v'tikun derabanan ke'in de'oreis ha'tikun. Anything which the Rabbanan established, they must use a template that's from the Torah itself. So is that just telling you, you know, it's a restriction, it's a simple restriction on how courts can work, right? The Rabbanan have limits, you know, the rabbis can't do whatever they want, and if they want to come up with a new law, it has to be based on some template. That's one way of seeing it. The other way you can say is that Rashi is telling you that we really invest the status of the, you know, you're calling it a quasi-ishus. But it's a quasi-ishus that's ki'in de'oraisa tikkun. We made it as strong as we possibly could. So the Gilyoni Hashas is assuming that I look at Mion as this weak kidushe derabah. But who says that's the case? Maybe I look at the kidushin of Mion as a really strong kidushin, right? The Rabbanan made it as strong as they possibly could. They based it on a de'oraisa template. And in fact, what's going to happen, the woman's going to turn 12 years old, right? And she's still with the guy. So what's going to happen overnight? Oh, right?
It will be a full
Ishas. How could it be a full, could it really be a full Ishas if it was such a quasi Ishas yesterday? Maybe yes. But definitely maybe no, right? You could, the son of the nose of Yehuda can respond to the Goyim Hashas saying, you're making a key assumption that the Kiddush of Mion is a weak quasi-Ishus. I disagree. I think it's a virtual Ishus, we could call it, right? It's as close as you can get to the real thing. You know, it's not sweet and low, it's
you have Rubio. You have just right? Much kicking the right to element by Congress of Chalitza, it's just that Chalitza happens to not be as strong as, like, kicking the right to Tika doesn't mean, like, that, like, you have to tie to the strongest, like,
well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. You know, maybe it doesn't, maybe it doesn't. That's not the most thing I always say. Whenever you see a Durabanan creation, so you always want to ask, is this something that's really new, or is this something that's just an expansion of a previous Durabanan concept? Right, Durabanan has two options. They can either create something new that's just related to something old, or they can expand something old. It's the same thing, just, you know, broader in scope. If you say that a certain takana is just an expansion of a de'oraisa concept, that's going to make it much more de'oraisa. As opposed to if I say something is a total new creation, that's just tangential.
Right, but why is... Like, you're just as de'oraisa by tying a chalitza as you are to kedusha. Why does it have to be one over the other?
Oh, 100% correct. Yeah. But if you make the argument that the son of God is making, right, and you can say that when he reads Rashi his way, right, the Gilyoni Hashas is going to say, if you read Rashi, I read Rashi my way. I think that Rashi is a chalitza. If you read Rashi your way, then it's only a quasi-Ishus. It doesn't make any sense. But we can say, well, if you read Rashi our way, it's not just a quasi-Ishus, it's a virtual Ishus. It's as close as you can get to the real thing. Which would actually have set up, so that's what I mean.
Right? That's he also says that on the Inkidushe, like...
I mean, right, but yeah. Pre-Takana, right? So what did the Takana change? Did the Takana make a radical transformation? Okay. Now it's a virtual Ishus, or did it only make a minor, you know, change, and now it's just a simple quasi-Ishus. So that's going to be a huge cut here in the world of Mia. If you ever learn Kiddushin, but if you're learning Kiddushin, you can say that really it depends on this, you know, focus between these two acronyms in Sanhedrin. People will look at you saying, what are you talking about? And then you can look at it. Okay. Shkach, guys.
Thank you.